October 20th afternoon, blustery and beautiful. Last night, I introduced you to a couple of things. One is that life is always changing. Sometimes a bit abruptly, sometimes more gradually, but life is always changing. The second thing I introduced us to is that when life changes, it's always interesting to see the self that emerges. Who do I become in the midst of those life changes? No, life changes don't necessarily always have to be dramatic or traumatic. They can be having children, buying a house, all those things that we do that recognize that a different person emerges because different causes and conditions are emerging. The other thing that I didn't introduce, but is also important to remember, is that every moment changes us. I will be changed from having given this talk, because it's sort of evolving as I speak. You may or may not be changed by my giving it, but we'll see. But you will be changed, many of you, be changed in a particular way because this may be the first time you've ever been in a place like this, connected for as long as we've been connected, in silence, in community, without having the normal social interchanges. So that will change. I also introduced you to a way of connecting with those changes that ultimately is meant to produce skillful compassion. And we call them the five skillful habits. And so what I'd like to do is to give you a bit of history about how those particular habits emerged and why we use them in our programs, and why we're using them to help you connect with the changes that are emerging as you begin to pay attention to your body differently and to some other things as we go through the entire retreat. So, no particular reason why we should make this recent entry, history about 3,000 years ago. What occurred was a radical change in how human beings viewed each other and viewed themselves. And Carl Jaspers, a German philosopher, is labeled as the Axial Age. And it's a turning point that he sees as a major turning point in history. And we went from being essentially a part of what was around us and basically hearing the words that are happening in our heads is not generated by us, but generated from beyond, if you will. Generated by whomever the gods may be, or generated by whatever's going on. And in the process of actually connecting to being individual humans in a group, we also begin to connect with how we were going to be with each other. So, Karen Armstrong, who's popularized the concept, looks at four civilizations, all of which changed radically, and all of those changes continue to be how we live today. So, democracy among the Greeks, being able to see that people had an independent way of connecting with each other that could allow them to judge how they wanted to be ruled. In the Indian subcontinent, the idea that compassion and being able to connect with living beings in a way that was gentle and compassionate began to emerge. And also some rules for living called the five precepts. In Israel, Hebrews had the Ten Commandments. In a sense that they were in community with each other. In China, Confucius gave us the Golden Rule. So all of these things that we take for granted occurred during this period of time. The five precepts which are rules for pretty standard rules for living: don't kill, don't steal, don't indulge in sexual misconduct. That's still resonating these days. Tell lies or spread rumors, and don't consume things that are going to keep you from paying attention to what you're doing. Okay. Of course, the Ten Commandments emerged in Israel, but the precepts are the basis for what our five skillful habits are, and they are have been even translated and made more modern by Thich Nhat Hanh, a Buddhist teacher and writer you probably have heard of, or at least have read, maybe even have read. And what he does is he calls them
five mindfulness trainings.
Thank you. The five mindfulness trainings. I've got too many fives here. that's another joke. So the five mindfulness trainings. And in the five mindfulness trainings, he makes it clear that they're not rules anymore. They're ways of engaging, and that we're constantly connecting with them in a particular way that allows us to see ourselves differently because we're constantly emerging. So the five skillful habits then follow from those. And the first one is respect for mortality. The idea that we're all living beings, and as living beings, what we really want to do is just to make sure that we live a life that respects the fact that we are mortal. Simply that. Okay. The second one, which substitutes for do not steal, is the idea that we want to be generous. In other words, we don't want to start taking things from ourselves that are really taking from us, and taking things from others that are really taking from them. So we're really connecting with being generous and connecting to giving to ourselves and others in a way that honors what we need. Not what we want necessarily, but what we need. Because sexual misconduct represents a violation of boundaries generally, we've chosen respect for boundaries. And just connecting with the sense that we all have boundaries, that we're really trying to make sure that we don't violate in others and we don't allow others to violate in us. Skillful speech, as opposed to don't tell lies, skillful speech is the sense of what we do that allows us to connect appropriately with ourselves, how we talk to ourselves and others, so that we're actually generating connection as opposed to breaking connection. And mindful consumption recognizes there's a whole lot more out there than just intoxicants that can interfere with how we actually connect with life and what we do with life and how we're actually going to be able to connect with each other. So we take those five skillful habits and we use them as a frame. Let's call it a frame. We use it as a frame in which to take awareness of the body. And we'll do that with each of the other three, awareness of the body. And if you think about each, the say, for instance, we'll start with respect for mortality. If you think about respect for mortality and awareness for the body, what you're doing is you're allowing yourself to connect with physical sensations and allowing them to inform you how well you're respecting your own mortality. And so you begin to listen carefully to what the body's saying at each stage in your life, and each of the selves that emerge at each stage in your life. And you're saying, what does it mean to respect my mortality? Now, that's easier said than done, because, and pardon me, but I'm going to use about three economists and one neuroscientist to talk about psychology. So The first economist I'm going to raise is a guy by the name of Robert Frank. And what he talks about is that if I begin to actually connect with what I need and begin to live that way, there are consequences. Because society is now sorted out so that I have to compete with all the time so that I feel like I'm actually safe. I feel like I've got a good job, I'm going to make it okay. If the boss asks me to do something, I'm going to say yes, because if I don't say yes, there's a possibility and I really want to get ahead, and I'll speak faster and faster because that's how our brain starts going. So we live in a society that asks us not to attend to what we're noticing in our body so that we can actually compete and live well in what society says is the right way to live. And so taking a moment to pay attention to that can create some distress. And so the idea then, and this is where Lynette was talking about, moment-to-moment changes, connection moment-to-moment, seeing what needs to be done moment-to-moment, as opposed to big things. The idea then is to be able to look at what our bodies are telling us moment to moment and honoring what they say, what that body is saying, in the ordinary way we engage with life. So obviously it means that when we're tired, and many of you when we did our first meditation found yourselves probably a little dozy, feeling a little bit heavier, especially that night, especially after you'd rushed here from probably work to get here. So when we're really connecting with those small moments, we're actually making a kind of micro changes in how we connect so that we can live more realistically with this physical body, more sleep. Noticing the pain medication we take to deal with the headache that emerges because we've been tense. Feeling our shoulders tense up as we go through the day, recognizing that that's the cost of actually performing a lot of the time. And so what we're doing then is we're beginning to recognize it at a time when there's something reasonable we can do so that we can actually engage with ourselves more. And those reasonable things can be very small. Obviously, getting a bit more sleep or getting to bed on time is a reasonable thing to do. Obviously, if I've got a headache, take my pain medication, but also do some things physically to help us manage that tension. Just connect with making sure we're going to be okay. And there are numerous other things that I could raise, but I think you get the gist of it. We're looking at the small changes throughout the day that allow us to connect with ourselves in a way that's manageable and still allow us to actually connect with what we need to do. And so if you think about respect for mortality as being kind of the first step in all of this, what we're doing is listening to our body, honoring what it needs in a moment-to-moment way, and creating the kind of person in that moment I need to be, the self I need to be, to attend to it. Listening to it, having the self that says, this is me, as opposed to I don't want this to be me, and then engaging with it effectively and skillfully. And what that does, especially with respect for mortality, is that often it allows us to be more productive, lets us connect with the world in a more realistic and, you know, compassionate way, helping others. Just being able to deal well with what the world throws at us. And they really are fairly small changes, usually. But notice what I said here. It allows us to connect with what the world throws at us in a more realistic way. So it says that we can be good doers. We can do things, we can do it well, and we will be able to sustain that. Respect for mortality. So give that a moment. And we can all be pretty comfortable with it. You've learned how to breathe, and you can actually use your breath to get your shoulders to come down. You've learned that you need enough sleep, and you've taken the time to rest. You've spent the day here, walking in the outside quietly, just paying attention to what's there. Beautiful stuff. You know how to do that. It doesn't take a lot. Now we get to generosity. So we've got the baseline covered. We can be pretty productive, doing okay, engage with the world as it is. My doctor once told me that your iron content is okay, but you have no reserves. So that you're okay so long as it doesn't push you past your limit because you've got no reserves. In other words, smart enough guy, go do something that's going to get more iron in you. Because the world isn't going to be like this all the time. And so, generosity is that extra thing you do which says, I'm not just going to engage in the world effectively, I'm going to see if I can thrive in the presence of this. And thriving means being generous to yourself in a way that allows you to say, whoa, that was neat. As opposed to say, that was a good day. So now we get to a space where it's harder to connect because that means that you're going to take some steps. They're going to push the envelope a bit. And what we're doing is we're talking about becoming more fully human. You're going to push the envelope a bit. So it may be that you don't just go to the gym to work out. It may be that you engage in something that you really like doing because it's fun, and you're engaging with others who enjoy the fun in the same way without any need for it to be in the service of anything. It's the ability to actually connect with yourself in a joyous way. Lynette constantly tells me I never smile. I have joy. I don't smile. So, but anyway, I'm having fun. So, believe it or not. So, when you really begin to connect with that, you're always pulling in that sense that I'm doing something for myself that makes me feel good. And then the guilt comes in, of course. Guilt? Nobody has guilt. So the guilt is, I don't deserve this. There's so many other people. There's something happening out there that I need to take care of, as opposed to stomping and saying I need to take care of me. But not just take care of me, I need to feed me. So when we're being generous, we often don't have the language, the sensation language, to connect with what that needs and what that is and what that feels like. So for instance, when we go for respect for mortality, we recognize, I know that I'm okay because my shoulders aren't tense. But how do I know that I'm generous? Because I don't have a language for that. We almost have to create it. What does exhilaration feel like in your body? What does feeling light feel like? I can give that, but what does it feel like? What does it feel like in your body to savor something? So now you become challenged to connect with that. I'm challenging you to connect with that. Because that generosity not only fuels resilience, it fuels joy and happiness. Now, what's interesting is that while life circumstances change, it is within the human capacity to find ways of being happy with yourself, or satisfied, or feeling good about what you're doing in the presence of that. Because it depends upon the person, the self you're bringing into it. And if it's a self that's saying, I can thrive wherever I am, if I can find the way to give myself that sense of joy, then what they learned 3,000 years ago applies now. I have that ability. That's mine. And I can create the self, or the self can be created. I won't create it. The self will emerge that can do that. As I begin to recognize what it feels like in the body to experience joy, to experience that exhilaration, and I can feel it in the body, then I set boundaries that are different. If the boundaries that I'm setting are just so I can get out there and do what I got to do, those are different than the boundaries I'm going to set if I want to be able to connect with myself and where I am in a way that makes me feel satisfied, happy, joy. That's independent of a physical problem. That's independent of age. That's independent of the things that are surrounding you that are troubling you. Because how I engage with them is independent of what they are. And that emerges as a different self emerges. So far what you've recognized is that I have some choices, but I've got to listen to my body, because that's the first place it tells me. I've got some choices about how I'm going to deal with what's happening. That a self will emerge as I make those choices. And so I've got the freedom to some extent not to be who I want to be, but to be who I can be in the presence of what's going on. So this isn't something that says it's all going to be okay. This is something that says I have to be in a way with myself that allows me to be okay with where I am. Not only okay, but I can take some sense of positive regard. I can take something from it that feels positive for me. So, as you feel that guilt, you also recognize, and skillful speech says to yourself, not that I deserve it, but that this is necessary. So that's really, really important. This is necessary. It's not that I deserve it. I don't know what deserve means. This is necessary. This is a way of living that matters and means something, not only to me, but to the people around me. And so when I start speaking to myself in a way that says I don't deserve, really that's not relevant. Not that I deserve or don't deserve, it's that this is really the only way I can begin to be fully human. And as fully human, it's the only way I can have compassion for myself and share that compassion. If I don't have it in the tank, I can't share it. And it's all connected, right now anyway, it's all connected to the physical expression of what's going on that I'm monitoring, I'm listening, I'm learning to listen to. When I walk outside and I have the wind, I feel it. It touches me, and it touches me in a way that can be exhilarating. Just to be able to walk and do that. So skillful speech is acknowledging that in a way that honors the boundaries, the generosity, the reality of my mortal being, and then mindful consumption. So mindful consumption is connected to who I should be. Because when I hear the words of who I should be, it keeps me from being who I can be. Not who I want to be, I might want to be something else, but who I can be. And the can be is really, really important, because the can be is achievable. It keeps me in the here and now. It allows me to connect with that, all that information I'm getting that says, I'm there, or not, who I can be. Now, there are all kinds of messages out there that say, be the best you can be, but that's not really what it means. It means be who you should be. And so we're constantly being driven by outside, you know, there's a neat book by a guy who used to be a philosopher but now has a motorcycle shop in Richmond, Virginia. But in any event, so he writes philosophy from his motorcycle shop. But what he talks about is that the idea is that the individuals who are trying to get our attention do so in a way that's highly addictive, and the processes they use are highly addictive. So being able to separate from that is not easy, and that's why it's so, so important to listen to that primary information coming from the body. And it isn't a sense that it feels good to do it. It's a sense, does this feel real? Do I have a gut feeling? Do I have this edge? Are my shoulders tense? Am I thinking, where am I? Because it's what we're learning to also attend to is a very close relationship between addiction, which for the moment gives me a rush, and a real physical response that says this is sustainable and endurable. The addictions are prominent around us. The actual listening to the body appropriately to see what I'm consuming, that takes discernment. So what you're dealing with here is something that is really, really important for you. It's the ability to connect with what you need, what you really need, and that's the source of self-compassion. It's not connecting to things I don't need, it's not connecting to what I want. It's connecting to what I truly need to flourish. It starts all the way at the bottom. I'm mortal. Learning that it's possible to be generous because that's necessary. Setting boundaries that are now going to be based upon what I need to flourish. Connecting with the idea that how I speak to myself is either going to honor that in a respectful way or have me spinning back down into the trap of trying to focus on what other people and what the world says I should be. Now, each of these things really take, first of all, it requires practice, okay? So, a psychologist who won the Nobel Prize in Economics. That's the only one that's ever happened anyway. This is a guy, his name is Daniel Kahneman. So what he's done is he's talked about how difficult it is to get ourselves off automatic pilot. So the brain is an extremely efficient but not necessarily effective information processor. Because what it does is every time we do something, it records it, and if we do it enough, it puts it into this space in this automatic system, which we really don't have access to it anymore. And what it then does is it makes us believe that we're making an independent choice, when in fact, we're making a choice based upon our past experience, not necessarily about what's in front of us. It takes a lot of effort to get out of that automatic pilot and consciously make the choice. So that's why we practice. So one of the reasons this is a practice and a discipline is that unless you're actually paying attention, and you're paying attention and you've learned to pay attention moment by moment to what the breath is showing you, because it's holding you in that moment and letting you pay attention to it, then you're going to be fooling yourself. We all do. And it's hard not to. The system is set up so you're going to fool yourself. You got a Nobel Prize, so people must believe it. Okay? So ultimately, practice, and diligent practice, is necessary. So you can walk away from here really with a lot of really a nice positive feeling, and then of course you want to maintain it, because that's how you can actually begin to deal with it differently. It also requires you to think about how you live your life. So sometimes our lives are totally congruent with who we are and what we need. Sometimes, not so much. So it really becomes important to recognize that each juncture requires a certain amount of personal integrity. So the first one, respect for mortality, means that you've got to be really honest about what your body is saying to you. So sure, I'd like to have my body say something else to me. But it's not. And I'd certainly like to feel like someday I'll be able to, but I don't know if I can. What I do know is this is what my body is saying to me now, and the person who emerges and pays diligent attention to that has to be the one who makes the decision, not the person I want to be, or the person I used to be. And so it takes a lot of honesty, which is very hard. It's very hard for all of us, certainly hard for me. It takes a lot of honesty to acknowledge that and make those kinds of connections to what's going on. Allow me to honor what my body's really saying. And it's the same for all of us. The second one, generosity, requires a sense of being able to discern. Because generosity, if it's really to allow me to avoid what's going on, it's not generosity. It's distraction. So generosity is that sense of being able to connect with what the body is saying and say, what do you really need? What do you really need so that you can, so the body, the physical part of you, can feel like it is flourishing. It is connecting with what's possible in a way that feels good. You can't put it another way. In the body, it feels good. Respect for limits requires courage. Because when I'm respecting limits, what I'm also doing is I'm beginning to say no to things that ordinarily I might say yes to, that may put me in conflict with what somebody else may want. And that's a big one. And so what it really means is being able to step back, take a breath, connect with what's real for you in terms of what your body is saying, and say, is this good for me? Now, like any of us, we're going to say, because it's necessary, not particularly good for me, but I've got to do it for you. I mean, that's the way the world works. But we can't do that all the time. I can't say yes all the time when some of those times are not very good for me, and if many of those times are not very good for me, just to make sure nobody's upset, just to make sure I feel safe. I can't do that. So it takes courage to actually say no. But no, often, is the most powerful thing and the most powerful gift you can give someone, Because when you've said yes, it's authentic. And it's, as one author put it, it's generous to someone else, but it's regenerative for you. Generosity is not generosity, it's obligation, unless it's regenerative. It's just that ability to discern that that takes practice. It's that ability to get off automatic, to take a conscious decision to say, this is what I need, and this is what is necessary, and that's what's important. So think about that. It's reconnecting to saying, this is what I need. I may not be able to get it, but I know what I need. So it's that ability to say, I know what I need, but also knowing that sometimes you've got to let go of that. It's the pattern of doing it all the time that becomes the problem. And then we're all the way, slipping all the way back down, aren't we? We're not respecting mortality. You know, we just throw generosity out the door, and we slide again. So we'll all slide. We all do it. But it's noticing that each connects to the other. And so the courage to say, I'm afraid I can't do that. It's something that allows you to connect with what's really real and possible for you. What you also want to connect to is the words you use for yourself. The idea that the guilt, and of course we all have it, or even the shame, that ultimately I'm not able to do this for you and I feel ashamed. You have to connect with that and really honor that, recognizing that they are important emotions but may not necessarily apply here and actually may cause more harm than good. And finally, it isn't that you're going to be independent of everybody, that you're not going to necessarily connect to anybody, that you're not going to take advice, but you're going to take the advice consistent with what you know you need. And what that means is developing a level of authenticity, not with the other person, that really to some extent doesn't matter as much, with yourself. I can't go pretending I'm someone else when the self that I am is rooted in what my body says I am. So, I have sort of a classic story of all this going wrong. So I may as well out myself. So a bunch of years ago, thank goodness a bunch of years ago, I was explored for cancer in my belly. And it had to do surgery in order to see that I didn't have it. Doctors said they wanted to see me 6 months later. I didn't figure out why they wanted to see me, but I found out fairly soon after I got in. He went in, looked again, and recognized the surgeon had taken out the wrong polyp. So we've got to do this all over again. And so what I did is, because I'm an extremely good, not meditator, but I can use my breath to control both my blood pressure and my heart rate, is that I allowed myself to pretend I wasn't scared because I was embarrassed and ashamed of being frightened. And so the person I projected was not the person I was. So I did this for, because I really wanted all the nurses not to think I was a coward. I projected the person that I wasn't. Now, had I protected the person I was, would it have made any difference to them? as long as I'm going to go through surgery and I'm not going to go screaming down there, they don't really care. As long as, and they could have said something, oh, that's normal, don't worry about it. They might have even given me some medication, for gosh sakes, okay? I could have just allowed it to happen, and my wife wouldn't want it to kill me, and she did, actually, because I wasn't doing it very well. And I continue to have that problem, by the way. So, as many of us do, it's a constant battle. So ultimately what happened is that the whole thing came crashing down just as I was going into surgery. And I actually, my body said, you know, you can't do this anymore. And so what happened is my blood pressure crashed. And so I passed out just before going in. So the joke, of course, is they were going to put me out anyway. But but ultimately, it's a lesson that needs to be relearned. So that's the other thing. We never get good at this. Okay? We never get good at this. These are lessons that life continues to remind us we are not good at this yet. These are hard habits to break. Beating myself up for breaking them doesn't help me keep them. It doesn't help me with the new ones. So the concept of self-compassion is the sense that if I take myself with all my warts and develop a loving relationship with it, a kind relationship with me. Because while I'm not perfect and certainly need improvement, I have all I've got. And unless I can connect with me in a respectful way, then I'm not available for anyone else either. So retreats like this bring us to a point where we can connect with ourselves in a particular way. They allow us for a moment just to have the peace to look at where we really are. And sometimes find ourselves saying, wow, that's great, I'm glad I'm here, and I'm glad I'm where I am. And sometimes it says, oh, so that's who I am. All are authentic. It's just the ability to connect with yourself and say, this is what my body tells me about me. What self am I going to bring to that right now, right here? What am I going to do that allows me to connect with myself that makes me feel more authentically human with all the things that we all experience? And that's really what we're doing here. We're giving ourselves a chance just to be with ourselves. To have the freedom to engage with that self that we are in a way that's compassionate and to honor what it needs. As you practice it here, you have the potential for translating it when you're out of here. Always remembering, the body has the knowledge I need to be who I can be.